fasten your seatbelt and turn up the radio. We're going on a road trip. I'm Glenn Moberg, and today on Route 51 Regional Talk Radio, our special guest, 7th District Congressman Sean Duffy. Mr. Duffy accomplished a significant feat last November. He returned North Central Wisconsin's 7th District to Republican control for the first time in 41 years, replacing longtime Democrat Dave Obey with a message of limited government, free market economics, and debt reduction through spending cuts. This is Mr. Duffy's first appearance on this program since the election, and we've got a lot to talk about. The Congressman's recent trip to Afghanistan, Libya, and the War Powers Act, the congressional debate over the debt ceiling, a recovery that's taking too long and producing too few jobs, the congressman's vote in favor of Paul Ryan's budget plan, including a controversial proposal to reform Medicare, and just recently, a plan, an alleged plan, to redraw the boundaries of the 7th Congressional District. Congressman Duffy is only here for the first half of the show, so if you've got a comment or a question for him, you need to call right now. Call us at 1-800-780-9742. Again, this is your show. Whether you agree or disagree with Congressman Duffy's positions, give us a phone call at 1-800-780-9742. Sean Duffy, I haven't had a chance to say this live on the air yet, so congratulations. It was quite a feat that you pulled off.
Thank you, Glenn. It's good to be here. We've tried to set this up a number of times, and it's finally great to be in studio with you and join Route 51.
And thank you on behalf of everyone who works here for your vote supporting public radio and public broadcasting earlier this year. I know that wasn't an easy vote for you to make.
Well, actually, the vote was easy, but I got to tell you what, some folks on the other side, my side of the aisle, were not happy with it. But I'm here to represent the constituents of Wisconsin 7, whether they're Republican or Democrat. I'm trying to do the best for Wisconsin 7, and I thought that vote was the right vote.
Tell us about your trip to Afghanistan and how that has affected the way you view the president's call for troop withdrawals last week.
Well, you know, first off, I've had a lingering concern about the length of time we've been in Afghanistan, the cost in regard to bloodshed, and dollars that we've had in Afghanistan. And I, before I called to reduce our troops, I wanted to go and actually see on the ground what was happening.
We had a couple of Wisconsin soldiers who just died this past week. The death toll continues, and it's, what, $10 billion a month to continue fighting there?
The cost is great. And when I was there, we participated in a ramp ceremony with one of our young men who died in action, and we're sending his body in a flight draped coffin home.
Right.
And then we participated in a memorial ceremony for the 9 men and women who died in the Kabul airport. And it was a very difficult moment, because you see the real cost of this war. And I came home, and I wanted to reflect a little bit. I didn't come back and say, listen, I think we need to come home right now. Because when I was there, I saw we're making progress. And since the president has surged, we are making great advancements over the last couple of years. And we weren't making great advancements in the years before that.
Mm-hmm.
And you see the real benefit of the American presence. But as we start to deal with our own issues at home, I think we have to start to scale back. We have to turn this operation over to the Afghani police force and military, continue the operation to train them up, but we have to start to transition to bring our men and women home. As you know, I'm traveling around this district talking about the budget constraints and how we have to start to live within our means. I can tell you, I can't come back and say, you know, we have to start to cut spending, but we're going to continue to build roads, bridges, and schools in Afghanistan.
It's been 10 years.
I can't do that. And so, you know, we have to look at every component of where we spend money and put it on the table and review it. And the military can't be an exception. And I believe that we need to start that transition to bring our men and women home from Afghanistan.
The president is at loggerheads with Congress right now over Libya and the War Powers Act. What's your view on that dispute? Do you think Congress should institute the War Powers Act and exert some control over our mission there?
I do. I think we should. And I joined with Dennis Kucinich in his legislation in regard to Libya. And I don't know that Dennis and I have been on the same page on a lot of issues, but on this one we are.
Yeah, we were together on the Joy Cardine show when I substituted last week, and my comment at the time was, well, there's an odd couple for you.
But, you know, I think Dennis has done a good job. He, you know, he's over on the Republican side of the aisle talking to people, shaking hands and going, you know, trying to, you know, put a deal together. And what I think is unique about Dennis is whether you're a Republican or a Democrat, he's a guy who reaches across the aisle, and he may not agree with folks on our side, but he's not disagreeable. He's a nice guy. And I think he's right on this one. At this point, we're fighting two wars. Why are we going to start to fight a third? And if you're going to fight a third, you better come to Congress and talk to us. I don't believe we can be the policeman of the world. We have to start to scale back some of our presence. We can't afford it anymore. And I think one of the largest crises that we're going to face is our debt crisis. And the amount of money we're spending overseas has to be seriously considered, and Libya is on the table.
Well, let's move on to the debt crisis. A war of words is heating up between the president and Republican congressional leaders over that debt ceiling vote. Here's what the president had to say at a news conference yesterday.
The tax cuts I'm proposing, we get rid of our tax breaks for millionaires and billionaires, tax breaks for oil companies and hedge fund managers and corporate jet owners. Malia and Sasha generally finish their homework a day ahead of time. They don't wait until the night before. They're not pulling all-nighters. You know, Congress can do the same thing. If you know you've got to do something, just do it. They need to do their job. Now's the time to go ahead and make the tough choices. That's why they're called leaders. You need to be here. I've been here. I've been doing Afghanistan and Bin Laden and the Great Crisis, and you stay here. Let's get it done.
Sean Duffy, the president basically saying that his 10-year-old daughter is more responsible than the Republican congressional leadership.
Well, we would agree on this. Leaders do lead. And when I heard the president make those comments, I couldn't help but think, well, then where have you been in the negotiations? I hear countless times how the president is on the golf course. I haven't golfed once this year. I'm working hard. We need the president to engage in the conversation. And once the Republicans, the Republican leadership in the House walked out of the conversation with the vice president, the president needs to step in and fill that void, but he hasn't been participating in the debt negotiations. And I think that's a real problem. And when he uses the reference to his children who get their work done the night before, well, let's not wait until the night before to start to engage in the conversation. And that's exactly what the president's done. I would agree with this, and I'm sure we're going to talk about our proposal with regard to the House budget. But one of the things that we did in there is we brought our tax rates from 35% down to 25%. And some of your listeners might be outraged. They go, what are you doing bringing the tax rates down to 25%? One of the problems that we face is big corporations on Wall Street, they don't pay 35%. GE didn't pay anything in taxes last year. So we have a tax code that has a certain rate, but people aren't paying it. And so what we do in that tax proposal is we reduce all the loopholes, all the nooks and crannies where people hide their money in a 10,000-page tax code. And I guarantee you most of your listeners don't take advantage of that tax code. It's been developed by Republicans and Democrats over the course of decades. And what it's used for is high-powered individuals who can hire high-powered lobbyists or lawyers to create loopholes for these people to hide their money. It's corporate welfare. It's crony capitalism. And we voted to take those loopholes out of the tax code and make people pay their fair share. So
you close the loopholes. Why can't you raise the top marginal rates, too? Those rates are lower than they've ever been in history already. They used to be 70% under Jack Kennedy and 90% under Dwight David Eisenhower, a Republican president.
Right. And I look at this. This is not 1960. It's not 1980. It's not 1990. This is a global marketplace. And it's not just big businesses. We here in Wausau, we are affected by global competition. We see it every day. You look at Green Heck Fan and other businesses here, they're affected by Chinese competition. What we have to do is make sure that we're competitive. We have the best workforce, the most productive workforce, the smartest workforce in the world. But we also have the second highest tax rate. I want to make sure that American businesses are going to be successful in America. So we stop losing jobs to places like China, India, Mexico, Vietnam. If it's less competitive here, we're going to see our jobs leave. And if they leave, the businesses aren't the ones that suffer. It's the Wisconsin families who lose jobs that suffer. So I want to make sure that we can engage in this new global competition and succeed and win and employ our people. Raising taxes on job creators isn't going to help the job seeker. We need to put our Wisconsin families back to work.
The union people that I've talked to say that we shouldn't be on a level playing field with these other countries. In fact, we're not right now because they're hiring folks at slave labor. They don't have to provide them with pensions or health care benefits like so many American companies do, and they don't have to follow our environmental regulations. But Sean, I don't want to get into that because we'll talk about it all, for the rest of the hour, and we've only got about 15 minutes here.
We could go into a second hour on that one, and if I could quickly address it though, Glenn.
Yeah.
I mean, I do think that, when we compete at the higher end. So when we have low-skilled labor, we can see those jobs go over. But when we have high-end labor where our high-skilled workforce is able to engage in this manufacturing, we do win. And we can't let them leave because we're over-regulating, over-mandating, and over-taxing our businesses, and they decide to go somewhere else because they are more competitive. I don't want to see that happen, and I think it's going to affect Wisconsin jobs if we raise taxes on our job creators.
Let's go to the phones. We have Teresa in Stevens Point. You're on Route 51 with Sean Duffy. Hello, Teresa.
Hi, thanks for taking my call. I have a question. I'm a Portage County resident, and I'd like to know, Congressman Duffy, why you don't want to be my representative anymore. I, to be honest, did not vote for you in the last election, but I've been trying to keep an open mind and hoping that you're going to be serving the people of your district and doing what's in our best interest, and it just kind of upsets me. If you think that what you're doing is really the best for our state and for our country, why you're not willing to stand on your record, why you feel it's necessary to redistrict in order to guarantee your reelection.
This is an alleged new redistricting map, which would take Stevens Point, Wisconsin Rapids, and Chippewa Falls out of the 7th District. Sean Duffy, your response to Teresa. First of all, is that map a legitimate proposal that's being looked at?
Well, first off, Teresa, I appreciate the question, and I'm happy that you enjoy my representation of you. It's been 42 years since a Republican has represented this area. I'm doing the best I can, being visible, being accessible, going out there and meeting as many people as I can to engage in a conversation about the trying times that we face. And I love that I have had a chance to represent Portage County. I did better there than many Republicans have in the past. I got 45% of the vote, and I was I've worked hard there. But when you look at these new maps, I got to tell you, as a freshman congressman, I don't write the maps, and actually the legislature does, and I got to see the rough proposal before an article came out in the Milwaukee Journal Sentinel. But
the Journal Sentinel article, or at least I think that was where I saw it, indicated that they quoted Paul Ryan as saying that you kept Pat Kreitlow's house in the district because Sean Duffy wanted it there. So that sounds, at least according to that quote, I don't know if it's accurate or not, that you were helping to draw up that map with Paul Ryan to help shore up your Republican base.
No. What I did is I said, listen, whatever you do, I want to make sure Pat Kreitlow's in the district. Because I had heard some postings that were saying Republicans were going to draw Pat Kreitlow out of the district. When I heard that coming from the Democrat side of the aisle, I want to make sure that doesn't happen. And so I didn't know what the map was going to look like. I just made one request that Pat Kreitlow be included in the district.
Let's listen to what Mr. Kreitlow said about the map.
It takes out thousands of friends and neighbors of mine, leaves my house in the 7th District. They were cynical enough to also take out Wisconsin Rapids and Stevens Point, cities that have been in the same congressional district for exactly 100 years. Sean Duffy can run, but he can't hide. A bad redistricting map is not going to save Sean Duffy from votes to destroy Medicare as we know it.
A lot in that brief quote from Mr. Kreitlow, but the basis of the argument here is that Wisconsin Rapids and Stevens Point have been linked with Wausau in this district for 100 years because they have shared history. You know, they're logging towns on the Wisconsin River. They share an airport, Central Wisconsin Airport. There are three higher education institutions, UW-Stevens Point, UW-Marshfield, Wood County, UW-Marathon County, that all share programs and work on degrees together. So with this shared history, doesn't it make sense that all of those areas would continue to be in the same district?
Well, you know, whenever you go through a redistricting period, people will look and throw stones at the map. You see that all over. And no matter what the map would look like, there would be stones cast. And, you know, frankly, from what I've seen, it appears that it accomplishes the legal goals. But, yeah, again, I can't sit back and say, I drew the map, because I didn't. I got to see it after it was done, and it'll be interesting to see what's going to be introduced on the state side. I don't know what that'll be. If it'll look like what we've seen coming from the Milwaukee Journal Sentinel, or if it's going to be, you know, tweaked in some other way.
Personally, would you like to see Stevens Point and Wisconsin Rapids stay in that district with Wausau?
Well, listen, I'm not going to engage in speculating on the map. I'll tell you this: I've enjoyed my work in Portage County. All over Wisconsin, Rapids and Wood County as a whole. I worked hard there. These people voted for me. But you know what? Whatever district I get, I'm going to work hard in. And whatever the 7th district will look like, I'm going to engage with people and share in conversation and ideas to make sure we turn this country around.
Teresa, thanks so much for the phone call. This is Route 51 Regional Talk Radio with Congressman Sean Duffy. We will be back with more of your phone calls after this.
Support for WPR comes from Rely Local Wausau, working to build the local economy and strengthen the community by making local business everybody's business. Learn more about locally owned and operated businesses at relylocal.com.
This is Route 51. Sean Duffy, 7th District Congressman, is our guest just until the bottom of the hour. 1-800-780-9742. If you'd like to squeeze in a phone call. And Sean, that quote from your likely Democratic opponent, Pat Kreitlow, said, a bad redistricting map won't save you. You can run, but you can't hide from your vote on the Paul Ryan budget, which Mr. Kreitlow says is going to destroy Medicare as we know it.
Yeah, and I think it's important that we have this conversation about Medicare because, first off, we have to acknowledge that there's a problem with Medicare. Everyone agrees with that. The President, Obama, President Clinton, Senate Democrats, and House Republicans all agree there's issues with Medicare. If you look at calculations by the Congressional Budget Office, they say the trust fund for Medicare goes broke in 9 years. The actual Medicare trustees say it goes broke in 12 years. This is some real issues that we have with Medicare. So instead of burying my head in the sand, I'm trying to vote for and advance a plan that's going to save it and protect it for future generations. And when we talk about it, I think it's important to go, what has the president done with Medicare? Some will say he doesn't have a plan. That's not true. He does have a plan. In PPACA or Obamacare, he takes $500 billion out of Medicare and uses it for Obamacare. And I think when we talk to seniors and they hear that their Social Security Trust Fund has been raided over the course of generations, and now they hear that Medicare is going to be raided to the tune of $500 billion, they're outraged. And then what he does to make up the funding gap that we see coming in future years, he institutes what's called the Independent Payment Advisory Board. It's called IPAB. And what this 15-member of unelected bureaucrats is going to do is going to reduce Medicare reimbursements for our seniors. And reimbursements are already incredibly low. You reduce reimbursements even further for some procedures for our seniors, you are going to affect their access to care today for our current seniors. I find it absolutely unacceptable that you're going to take away Medicare for current seniors and you're going to take $500 billion away from them. So what we've done is this. We've said, listen, if you're 55 or older, you get the current plan that exists. We do that because if you're in your retirement, you can't change the plan upon someone. Or if you're about to retire, you've planned your whole retirement around
Medicare. What about people who say that I want the Medicare system the way we have it right now for people who are 45, 35, for my teenage son, for kids who aren't born yet? This is a social contract with our seniors, providing them with free medical care. Why would you pull it away for people under 55?
Well, the that's a good question. But no one thinks that we can keep on with the same program. The president doesn't think that. That's why he's instituted the Independent Payment Advisory Board. That's why he's done these different things with Medicare. But what's important is we acknowledge the problem and we fix it. What's happened is, you know, when Medicare was instituted, there were 19 workers for every one retiree. Now there's 3 workers for every retiree. It's going to go down to 2 workers for every retiree in about 20 years. Healthcare costs are going up at 8% a year, and people live longer. The numbers just don't work out. So what we want to do is we want to save it for this current generation and protect it for future generations. And what we do is within Medicare, we allow insurance companies to offer different coverage arrays. You have a whole bunch of coverage options that you can pick from. It is subsidized by the government. You will pay a small portion of the cost of Medicare.
It's a voucher, right? That's what people are saying. It's a voucher coupon.
Well, a voucher would be one where I say, here's a voucher. Go into the market and get yourself some insurance. That's not what it is. It's actually set up through Medicare.
I mean, how many 85-year-old people with heart conditions, diabetes, and asthma, and maybe an artificial hip? You know, private insurance companies don't want to insure these people at any cost.
Medicare Advantage already provides that kind of insurance. It's the same kind of thing. You're going to be guaranteed coverage because the insurance companies that come into the program are going to cover everyone in the program. Now, you make a good point. As you get older and sicker, you are going to get more of a subsidy, more of a copay for your insurance. When you're younger and healthier,
I wish we had, but
let me just make one other point.
Another half hour. We've got 2 minutes before we're going to lose
What you have is a situation where the wealthier will pay more, they get less of a subsidy. The poorer and sicker will get greater benefits. And when we do this, this is the only proposal that saves Medicare. And that's what I'm about. I want to save Medicare. If there's other good ideas on the table, I'll look at them. But let's not bury our sand. Let's save Medicare
for
this generation.
Let's talk about the politics real quick.
Sure.
ABC News poll, 78% say they don't touch Medicare. 72% say they'd rather cut the deficit by raising taxes on the rich than by cutting Medicare. Paul Ryan, right now he is the third most unpopular Republican in the country behind Newt Gingrich and Sarah Palin. This proposal of his is being rejected by the American people. Did you even check with your constituents before you voted for it?
Listen, Glenn, if you look at the president's proposal that is going to affect current care for seniors, I find that to be unacceptable. The Independent Payment Advisory Board, I'd ask your listeners to check it out, and we have the only program that saves Medicare, the only proposal that protects it for future generations. This plan with the president to steal $500 billion from it, unacceptable. Reducing access to care for current seniors, absolutely unacceptable. I'm here to save it, protect it, and keep it for this generation and for future generations.
Congressman Sean Duffy, I wish we had more time. We could talk about this and still be on the air, I think, on July 5th. This is Route 51 Regional Talk Radio. We'll be back with Eric Giordano. We're back on Route 51 Regional Talk Radio on the Ideas Network. I'm Glenn Moberg. You just tuned in, you missed a good half hour. We had 7th District Republican freshman Congressman Sean Duffy on, and he defended his vote for the budget repair bill, the budget bill that Congressman Paul Ryan had put forward, a budget bill that makes some changes to the Medicare program. Mr. Duffy, quite adamant, he's trying to save Medicare for our old folks. He says the system as it stands right now is unsustainable, and we need to make these changes in order to save it. Of course, the Wall Street Journal calling it a reform that would kill Medicare as we know it, and Pat Kreitlow, who we also heard from, accusing Mr. Duffy of trying to destroy Medicare. This is a topic that is going to be discussed quite a bit as we head into the 2012 elections, and we'd like you to weigh in on it. We'd also like you to weigh in on the other subjects that we talked about in the last half hour, the debt ceiling. Are we going to default on the debt ceiling? President Obama telling the Republican congressional leadership that they were being no more responsible than his 10-year-old daughter in the way they were tackling the problem. Mr. Duffy saying that maybe Mr. Obama needs to spend less time on the golf course and become personally involved in the negotiations. Troop withdrawals from Afghanistan, the War Powers Act with Libya, and a controversial plan to redistrict, to redraw the 7th Congressional District, taking Stevens Point, Wisconsin Rapids, and Chippewa Falls out of the district. Mr. Duffy, not weighing in on the specifics, he said, until he sees actually what is being proposed, although he did say in the last half hour that it was at his suggestion that Pat Kreitlow's home, Pat Kreitlow, the Democrat who's going to be running against him, it's still in the 7th District, although his base of support in Chippewa Falls, all of his friends and supporters apparently have been drawn out of it by this plan that was apparently brought forward by Paul Ryan and the Republican leadership. What do you think? 1-800-780-9742. This is your program. It works better when you call in. We have wide open phone lines right now, so you can get a chance to make your voice and your comment heard. And joining me for the next half hour, rounding out the show, Eric Giordano, professor of political science at UW Marathon County, and also the director of the Wisconsin Institute for Public Policy and Service. 1-800-780-9742. Eric Giordano, you heard that passionate defense of Mr. Duffy's vote for the Paul Ryan budget plan and its reform of Medicare. What was your reaction to what he said?
Well, my reaction is that we've got a major, major philosophical difference here about how to address the future of healthcare. Of course, that's obvious. We know that. We saw that in the debates running up to the passage of the Health Care Reform Act. But this is serious stuff here. I mean, we're talking about, you know, changing Medicare as we know it. We're talking about moving it more towards a system that requires principles of the law of supply and demand over healthcare. And I think the real question is, you know, are people willing to allow healthcare decisions to be made by people who may be not always thinking in terms of the law of supply and demand and in the way they think of buying a new television because it's slightly cheaper, has this better feature. I think that it's difficult because as we start to make decisions about our own individual health care, they affect everybody else. If we buy a commodity in the store and it's a defective commodity or something happens, well, we've lost something. Here, if we purchase a plan, a medical plan or don't, as the case may be, it's going to affect you and I down the road as we have to pay more taxes for the health care of those who don't receive adequate coverage or adequate treatment.
Do we treat health care as a commodity, as something to be bought and sold with a profit motive? The hospitals have to make a profit to pay their doctors. The doctors have to make a profit. The insurance companies have to make a profit. And at what point can you make a profit trying to insure someone who's 80 years old with a wide variety of very expensive medical conditions?
Well, apparently there's a lot of profit to be made there, but the issue really is one of people, yes, perhaps being allowed to make certain choices, allowing a little more business freedom to produce products and having some competition. But another model, sort of a competing philosophy, would be to treat healthcare as a public good and to pool healthcare resources and to pool healthcare problems. That way you're spreading the risk and spreading the costs. There can still be profits made, although clearly some industries will suffer. And so, you know, this really is a question of who's going to win and who's going to lose. And there's going to be winners and losers in this, and that's part of the reason this issue is such an important one.
And Mr. Duffy, again, pointing out accurately that pretty soon it's going to be two working people for every one retiree, which is what causes the problem we've got with the Medicare financing.
Right, and he is correct to point that out, and it's important that we address the problem. I mean, there really is an impending crisis. Something has to be done. The question is, you know, which direction are we going to go to try to solve it?
And I'll point out, too, that the Medicare payroll tax right now is very low. It's 1.45%, less than 1.5% of a worker's payroll, compared to 6.2%, which is being charged for Social Security. It seems there'd be some opportunity to adjust that upward if we were willing to consider tax increases. Well, let's go to Marion in Wausau. Marion, you're on Route 51 with Eric Giordano. Hello, Marion.
Thank you. My question for Eric is, on different ways that I think that Medicare is being maligned. by the Republicans, but I'm not sure of the statistics. Like, for instance, Sean said that Obama's plan will hurt some people who are on Medicare, and I understood it was the Advantage plan that was in three of the larger populated states that was inequitable, and Obama's plan would make it more equitable. It would not hurt people in the United States, in Wausau or Wisconsin. Eric, what is it? Is in the Obama health care plan that they're faulting? Is that correct? And what is it that is wrong with it?
Eric Giordano?
Yeah, I'm no expert on this. I'll be the first to admit that. I think that the idea is that that taking that money is going to create more equity, and it will probably raise costs for some, but I don't think it's going to hurt, broadly speaking, the overall distribution of healthcare through Medicare. I think it is going to raise costs in some cases, but costs are going to be going up regardless. I have not seen whether or not that's going to hurt Wisconsin in the way that you've asked that question. I just don't know.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, I understood that. Well, there was that bill that previously, and I can't remember. I think it was somebody from Nebraska was holding off, not going to sign, and then they gave him a special privilege for just his state. I understood it was a similar kind of thing to that.
Marion, we'll have to look into it. Thanks so much for the phone call.
Thanks, Marion.
Let's go to Denise in Rhinelander. Denise, you're on Route 51.
Yeah, this is Dennis.
Dennis, I'm sorry. It was written wrong on my computer here.
My point was that as I listened to Representative Duffy, I was very disappointed in what I felt were the answers that is a kind of a political attack on President Obama about the health care matter. It's clear that we have an issue that needs to be addressed with Medicare as far as cost and cost containment. But the idea that he took $500 billion away from the seniors, in quote, is just disingenuous. It's an idea that we're trying to control costs that may look at, and which they refuse to do when President set up the plan on prescription drugs, is to be able to negotiate for a more reasonable cost for those prescription drugs for seniors, just like the veterans system. Beyond that, the idea that we can't talk about costs through this boring, quote, unelected bureaucrat, it's absurd. Because, of course, the issue is we need to rein in the cost because it's running away from us. And if we don't do that, yes, the system will fail. I believe that Obamacare, as they refer to it pejoratively, is an attempt at trying to figure out a way to start bringing the cost down and to offer coverage universally. And that's what we need to do.
Dennis, thanks so much for the phone call. And again, the bill was called the Affordable Care Act.
Right. You know, I mean, what we're really seeing here again is this just major philosophical divide where President Obama's plan, in its current form, is designed to share risks, share costs, and thereby bring them down, create cost savings through pooling, forcing, for example, and I use that term purposefully, people to buy insurance, to buy into the system so that we can spread those costs. Sean Duffy, Paul Ryan, and others, they see this as a philosophical issue. We're creating larger government. We're creating less freedoms. We're putting, as they might consider it, the onus on businesses and individuals to force them to change behavior. And this is something that is very difficult for those on the conservative side to accept. So but both are arguing that they're trying to reduce costs, but they're coming at it in a completely different manner. I do agree with the caller to some extent that to pull out, one figure and then sort of rail on that as an attempt to hurt seniors and to hurt others really isn't quite accurate. I think it's just a different approach, and I don't think we fully know what the results are going to be.
1-800-780-9742. If you were listening to the comments of Congressman Sean Duffy, who spent the first half of the show with us, his support for the Paul Ryan plan to reform Medicare, Mr. Duffy says it has to be done in order to save the system. You can also give us a call about the new congressional map that's been bandied about, which would take Stevens Point, Wisconsin Rapids, and Chippewa Falls, all Democratic areas, out of the 7th District and move them to Ron Kind's district, thus making Mr. Kind more reelectable because he's a Democrat, and also helping Mr. Duffy. Sean Duffy, again, disavowed any direct influence on the map, with the exception, he said, that he wanted Pat Kreitlow, his Democratic opponent, to stay in the 7th District. 1-800-780-9742. We've got a lot on our plates. This is Route 51 Regional Talk Radio on the Ideas Network.
Support for WPR comes from UMR, a United Healthcare company providing employee benefits administration, integrated health management, and pharmacy benefits administration for self-funded employers throughout the U.S. More at umr.com.
Support for WPR comes from Northwind Renewable Energy Stevens Point, partnering with Focus on Energy to provide clean, renewable energy for Wisconsin residents, specializing in Velux residential solar hot water systems. Learn more at northwindre.com.
I'm Glenn Moberg. This is Route 51 Regional Talk Radio. We're discussing Congressman Sean Duffy's comments during the first half of this program with Eric Giordano, professor of political science at UW Marathon County, and you taking your phone calls at 1-800-780-9742. Let's go to Saul in Stevens Point. Saul, you're on Route 51. Hello, Saul.
Yeah, hi, Glenn and guests. One of the things that bothers me about all of this is there's all this talk and breastfeeding about what great patriot the Americans should be or are, or how our president is not, but we have not paid a single dime on budget for these two wars. At least Obama put the budget for the wars in the budget. For 8 years, it was off budget. It was all special authorizations. And here we are, we're fighting two wars, kids from this area are getting killed and maimed, and yet we don't spend one extra dime in extra taxes to support those wars. What kind of patriotism is that?
Eric Giordano, a rhetorical question, but a good one.
Sure, sure, tough one, but good. I think you raise a legitimate point, and I at least give, I certainly give Congressman Duffy credit for saying, in public, I cannot continue to support a war when, we're not helping our own country. Now, what he doesn't address, what the Republicans in general don't address, which I think is unfortunate, is that there really are more than one option on the table besides cutting spending. I think most people are in agreement. Most Americans are in agreement that government spending has to be cut, and war, spending on wars is one of those things. But we have heard nothing about taxation, except that they will not raise taxes in any way, shape, or form. We can't keep going down the path. We probably need to have some compromise on this. It would be nice for people to stand off the principles for a minute and really sit down and talk about getting out of our fiscal problems. Withdrawing from Afghanistan responsibly, reasonably, seems like part of that solution.
Saul, do you have a follow-up?
Yeah, I still don't get it. Why doesn't this country pay extra in taxes, as they always have, when our kids are going in there and fighting and getting maimed? Why can't we do that? That has nothing to do with, tax breaks and so on. It's just, this is the first time I can remember where people have made believe that these wars are just on TVs and we have no responsibility to provide extra support, financial support, tax support, specifically for those wars.
Saul, thanks so much for the phone call, and I appreciate the passion in your voice.
Sure, and it's a good point. I mean, I think that we really ought to be paying for these wars. I'm not sure why we're not, except my gut reaction is that the Republicans have sort of drawn the line in the sand, that they will not raise taxes under any circumstances. That is not a political, that is not a part of the political platform. That's not a part of the path to political victory at home. I think it's a bit unfortunate. I think that they believe that's one of the fundamental purposes of government, if government is to do anything. And so, you know, to protect Americans, they see this as part of a war on terror, as part of a greater global conflict. This is a legitimate use of American taxpayer dollars, but not so much so that we can't cut other programs instead of cutting for defense.
And we have to also consider, Eric, that right now only 1 or 2% of the United States population is actually fighting our wars. In previous wars, we had a draft. We had vast numbers of people actually making physical sacrifices for those wars. And, of course, it would make sense to make a monetary sacrifice to support the troops when so many of them came from your own family or your friends' families. You knew all of these people who are fighting. It's a relatively small segment of the population right now that's doing all of the work for us. I want to move to the debt ceiling, before we run out of time. And Timothy Geithner had an interesting, I'm not sure if it was a show that he was putting on, but I have heard constitutional scholars lately, within the last couple of days, talking about the 14th Amendment. What I'm going to do is pull out my handy pocket constitution, which is what Mr. Geithner did on television. And he went to the 14th Amendment, which was passed after the Civil War. Paragraph 4, here's a direct quote. "The validity of the public debt of the United States, authored by law, including debts incurred for payment of pensions and bounties for services in suppressing insurrection or rebellion, shall not be questioned." In the Constitution, the validity of the public debt shall not be questioned. According to this point of view, all of this talk about the debt ceiling is really a matter of histrionics and a waste of time, because a debt ceiling is unconstitutional. According to the 14th Amendment, Congress cannot keep the country from paying its debts.
Well, that's an interesting interpretation. It would have to be for the Supreme Court probably to interpret that. I'm just going to read it here again. "But neither the United States nor any state shall assume or pay any debt or obligation incurred in aid of resurrection or rebellion."
Read paragraph 4.
Yeah, I am reading paragraph 4. So one interpretation, Glenn, though, could be not that you can't hold debt, but that you cannot question the debt that's held for those specific purposes. Do you understand what I'm saying?
Right.
So I'm not sure that I agree with Geithner's interpretation, and certainly unless the Supreme Court or the courts in general weighed in, I don't think we could make much of that at this point.
Well, it came up in a news conference with President Obama, and I think he said something like, "I'm not a constitutional lawyer," although he was a constitutional scholar.
Right.
So, we may get to the point where if this debt ceiling debate gets down to the point where it really looks like we're going to default, the president, at least according to his Treasury Secretary, may simply throw up his hands and say, "Here's the 14th Amendment of the U.S. Constitution. We're going to pay these bills, and everything you are doing in Congress is unconstitutional."
Well, I don't think it's going to come to that. I think, though, we can look at the model of Greece. We can look at what's going on in Europe, and we can say, look, these are serious matters. And the United States, as the global economic leader, to default on the debt, it would have incredibly terrible consequences for us and many peoples around the world. I don't think they're going to let that happen. I think a lot of what we're hearing is grandstanding, a lot of walking out, a lot of blaming. We're going to get around to this, and we're going to get it done. Unfortunately, you and I are going to have to listen to all of this bickering until they do.
Indeed, we are. Eric Giordano, thank you so much for being with us today and for filling in the second half hour. It's been an interesting show way around. I love talking to Congressman Duffy. He's an articulate, passionate, very interesting, and in many ways a person who will take positions that you don't always expect him to take. And we saw a little of that during the first half of the show. And we want to thank today's guests, 7th District Congressman Sean Duffy and Eric Giordano, Director of Political Science at UW-Marathon County and Director of the Wisconsin Institute for Public Policy and Service. Thanks to our executive producer, Rick Ryer, our on-air producers, Jane Ritker and Jacob Clotty. Thanks, as always, to John Altenberg for the Route 51 theme. Now, next Thursday on Route 51, we continue our summer music series with a very special program. The critically acclaimed indie rock band, Communist Daughter, that's her real name, they will be live in our studio performing acoustic versions of songs from their hit CD Soundtrack for the End. The name of it again, Soundtrack for the End. The Minneapolis-based band performed at last year's Why Not Wausau Festival. They'll be back in town later this month, and we will talk about their music and lyrics with bandleader John Solomon, bass player Adam Switlick, who is a Wausau native, and also the group's other musicians. Live music as we continue our music series with the indie rock band Communist Daughter next Thursday at 5 here on Route 51. Thanks again for riding along with us today. Have a great 4th of July weekend. Until next week, we are heading out of town.